Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Right, the podcast for first-time instructors, experienced instructors, and anyone else interested in learning how to teach writing. I'm Daniel Anderson, and we're coming to you from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. We have a number of guests with us today, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Emma. I'm also a graduate student here at Chapel Hill. I work on early modern drama.
Hi, I'm Devin. I'm a first-year graduate student here at Chapel Hill, and I work on Global Southern Literature.
Hi, I'm Anna. I'm a PhD student in the Department of English here at Chapel Hill, and I study 19th century British literature.
Hi, I'm Spencer. I'm also a student at UNC Chapel Hill in the English department, and I study British literature of the long 19th century.
Hello, my name is X. I'm also a PhD student in English, and I work with queer Latinx poetry.
Fantastic. Well, I'm super excited to have everyone here because in addition to these scholarship areas that everyone is mentioning, we're all teachers of writing and have experience teaching first-year composition here at UNC Chapel Hill. And to that end, we're going to talk about group work. If anyone listening isn't familiar with Chapel Hill's writing program, there's a lot of group activities in there. So we're going to see if we can give some good advice about group work. There's an article that we've read in advance. It's called Student Collaboration in Group Work, Inclusion as Participation. So we may take up some points of that article. And I guess I'll let you all take it away. And if there's something you want to highlight in the piece, go ahead and do that. Or we can talk about inclusion and group work broadly as well.
This is kind of a broad point, but the very beginning of the article talks about group work as something that promotes learning and socialization. So I feel like it's important to keep that framework that socialization is just as important as the learning component, and that group work has that dual purpose.
Absolutely. I really think that we have a unique opportunity to work with students who are brand new to the college setting and really are kind of getting their footing and figuring out how the social dynamics might be different than in high school, and kind of, you know, defining themselves maybe a little bit differently, finding their footing in a new context. So I feel like it's a really exciting time to get to work with them, but also definitely can come with some challenges because they're, you know, transitioning into a very different space than they've been in before.
Is it the case that the article is saying both of those things happen, or that when they happen together, it actually amplifies the learning and you get kind of more than the sum of the parts?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it because it talks about like giving authority to groups later on and how having a classroom authority within those groups promotes the learning.
Uh-huh. That decentering of authority seems like one of the main outcomes that it was talking about. I agree with that. And then I wonder if the social aspects of it, I don't think we want to put one above the other. We need to learn about rhetoric and writing, and students need to navigate a lot of professional context, but also learning about how to be together and socialize and work in groups. I think that's probably as important of an outcome in some ways. Would you all agree, or what is the main, you know, are we working on both of these threads at the same time, I guess?
Yeah, I think in my classroom, I really try to emphasize that the kind of soft skills that they get are as important as the hard skills, like writing skills. I previously taught in a program that was more communication-based, so I've kind of carried over ideas of communication and writing as not just text on paper or words in a Word document into the way that I craft group work in my classroom, and I think that allows me to really emphasize the social aspect of group work.
Yeah, and in my groups, I think one thing I've noticed is how much the group work and getting to know their peers better also really supplements and supports their ability to learn some of these composition communication processes. And you know, that goes back to that transitioning authority, shifting authority point. I was really impressed with some of my students yesterday who were working in a group and, you know, kind of looked at me and were like, I don't know how to do this. They're learning to make podcasts right now. Or like, I don't know how to use this video editing software. And I saw them pretty quickly turning to each other after that and leaning on each other to figure out like who kind of has a strong point or a strong understanding of the communication point, who maybe is more comfortable with the video software. So I think, you know, it's really great getting to see them, you know, work on some of those soft skills, but also how directly those soft skills impact their ability to learn and you know, rely on each other to catch up on things that they maybe just don't get at first.
If I could add on to this, I would say the sort of topic of trust is very important to this entire thing. And you have to trust that they trust each other and that they trust you as an instructor, so you can begin shifting those sort of power dynamics in the classroom.
I like that a lot, X. And I'm going to read a quote from the article and see if we can connect, Emma, your point about noticing what was going on, and X, you're talking about trust. So the article says, inclusion in education is most often described through the lenses of ideology and policy and not as an empirical issue. And I think both of those are at play, but this idea by empirical issue, I think what they're talking about is how do we get at the nuts and bolts of how does inclusion happen? And I would say the same for like, how does trust happen? It's really easy to say we need an environment of trust. You notice these groups working in a certain way. And I guess that's my question is, how do we get to this micro level of implementing, noticing, and seeing these outcomes that we want in the classroom and maybe promoting them?
Yeah, and I'd be curious to hear what people say, because, you know, they, especially if you're starting group work super early on in a class, like they just met each other. They also, you know, for the people we're teaching, they just got to campus. They're not used to these people they're around. And, you know, I did some smaller projects to kind of work up to these bigger group projects and help them get to know each other. But still, I feel like there is concern about that level of trust that they have in each other.
So like maybe a certain level of independence can help promote that trust, because as we talked about in the orientation, like sometimes it can be useful to walk through the classroom and check up on groups. But I found that when I try to do that, things kind of just shut down and they aren't interacting with one another as much. So lately, I've just been trying to leave them on their own more and hope that that promotes trust within the groups.
So physical presence could be like a real tangible way of, I don't know, modifying the environment or trying to get this on the ground activity to have this element of trust in it. I think we're kind of getting to some of the eventual place where we want to be with is, how do you pass this along to other instructors and turn them into tangible strategies that you could use in your class? So I can see how just modifying your physical presence and how you're interacting with these groups is a key one, probably. And, you know, if you're hovering over the group, it's probably not saying I trust you very much. Let's look at the counterexamples when things aren't going so well, maybe. Trying to think through different scenarios of, I want this to be working optimally. What else can I do to sort of facilitate that good group work that's functioning?
I think empowering students to feel like they have some authority to speak on something can be really powerful. And that can be as simple as just having them research something for a few minutes and write about it, or like disseminate an article and have them read it and then report to each other. Like putting them that in a position where they can really have something to say and not feel like they're being sort of obligated to participate in something that maybe they don't see as useful or something they see as busy work. I think making kind of activating them in that way by either having them write, having them read something and then share out with their group can be a good way to kind of place them in a position of both responsibility, but also kind of facilitating engagement themselves. It's not just the instructor giving a lecture and that being passively received. They're kind of being asked to take ownership in a way. And I think that that can facilitate that kind of respect between peers that can lead to kind of more inclusive kind of environment within the groups.
Yeah, I think something I might try the next time I'm, you know, working with a new set of groups is to, instead of waiting for them to ask each other for help, to try to do a little bit more proactive chances for them to show what they know and show the things that they can rely on each other for. So that's trust starts building in really concrete ways. So they can really see each other as authorities.
Yeah, I like we're getting at some good specific strategies. So, you know, give them a writing task, get them started on something, or give them opportunities to show what they know. Is there an underlying flip side of maybe we make assumptions that we can just start a group work and all five members will feel confident and are like ready to go? Like, what is maybe underneath the need to seed things in that way? Is there something? And I don't know if I'm coming through real clearly with my question. I'm wondering if there's like a security or a false assumption that we make that, you know, that everyone's ready to participate in a group or everyone feels confident, you know, that maybe there's something that we don't notice typically that maybe we need to bring to the surface.
Maybe that comes back to that tension between like learning and socialization. And sometimes we just assume that it's time to jump straight to the learning and everyone's ready for that. But something I want to do as I teach future semesters is spending more time in the beginning, maybe doing some icebreaker activities and promoting that socialization before we jump into these larger group activities.
Yeah, that seems valuable. In the article, it actually broke some of this out because they were, you know, trying to, well, it was a research article, so they were trying to evaluate, do we have good inclusion and group work happening in this class? And so they came up with five elements of collaboration. And I'll just list them here and maybe we can talk about those. It said positive interdependence, individual accountability, face-to-face promotive interaction, interpersonal and small group skills, and group processing. So there was a gloss in the article for each of these. I just kind of pulled out the main items. Is it possible to sort of like come up with a recipe or a formula? Like if I can get these five things, they're in good shape. And then what of these five, you know, what do we say about these five things? Which ones stand out? Which ones have we had success working on? What do you make of these?
Yeah. So as I was reading this article, I think individual accountability and face-to-face promotive interaction were pretty familiar to me and seem to be things that I implement in my classroom and group work structuring already. But positive interdependence was something that I hadn't really considered before, at least at the level that this article speaks about it. Because I don't think in the past I have necessarily been super intentional about setting up group work that facilitates positive relationships and a pursuit towards common goals that aren't necessarily just the assignment. So I think that's something that I want to pursue as I continue to think about structuring group work in my courses.
Yeah. What would that look like?
I think like having more clear goals for them and maybe also asking the students themselves to set goals within their groups. That way they can work towards what they would like to achieve. Because at the level of like assignments that are submitted in my class, I do try to prioritize students setting goals for themselves and achieving those goals. But I hadn't necessarily thought about groups together setting these goals and achieving them.
That makes sense. Is there a tension between the individual accountability and then this interdependence? I'm thinking of the bugaboo that always comes up with grades. Like if I'm getting graded with a group, what do I do individually? But this seems to be saying we want interdependence. We want my grade hinging on someone else's grade, if I'm understanding that term correctly.
Yeah, I find myself thinking of the very common perception that I've noticed among students and even shared in myself is kind of a suspicion of group work, because I'm sure all of us have a memory of being in a very dysfunctional group at some point during school, where perhaps everyone was beholden to the same standard and got the same grade, but some people in the group worked harder than others. So students might be coming with that kind of baggage as well. So they don't understand, or maybe they don't recognize the possibility for a positive interdependence. They see that as necessarily a negative thing and see themselves more as sort of individuals that are having to sort of navigate the group context rather than members of a community So I think that makes our task a little bit difficult, but also full possibility, because I think that interdependence can and should be something that is a positive thing and recognizes that they are all members of a discourse community, which leans back into our kind of philosophy of 105, that all rhetorical situations are social and have different participants in it. So I think that's certainly at play, but something that we can effectively address in this class.
I'm hearing that we're a little bit careful or cautious, or that maybe we take a posture toward group work, figure out what could go wrong and make sure it doesn't go wrong in some ways. And I'm just thinking through, imagining, what if you went the other direction and just said, it's way more important to get this interdependence, or to teach what you called soft skills, these group skills. You know, we're just going to really push on this and be less careful and more committed to this, even if it has some challenges.
Yeah, and I'm thinking through some more concrete ways of how we can really balance that interdependence and then those independent beliefs or what their personal focuses are. And Devin, I think that's a really great point about trying to find some sort of link between those two things, so it really matters to the students. And I think it is hard. And one of the things I've noticed that's sort of uniquely challenging about group work is that they all have different interests, they all have different focuses, and they're all doing the same project, but they're probably taking total different things out of it. You know, a student that's interested in bio is going to have a total different takeaway from this project than a student that's interested in computer science. And, you know, I think the idea of having them set goals as a group sounds really good. And I'm also wondering if having them really communicate to each other how they might have different personal goals and seeing those different personal goals laid out together might establish a more positive sentiment around the differences that they have. Because I think when you make it a little bit more personal like that, you know, you can cheer on your groupmates for having a different focus than you, and you kind of see the direction they're going instead of making some of those more like negative assumptions because they're working in a way that's different from you.
So I'm wondering if everything that we do in a class like this is in some ways an approximation. You're in school, you're not in the workforce, you're acting like you're a scientist and you're in a science unit. So we're never real world absolutely in this teaching situation, but I'm thinking about the difference between a group that I belong to that I'm invested in on a personal level, or, you know, a professional level, I'm getting paid to do this. And so this interdependence has a strength to it that that gets watered down a little bit by the approximation of being in class doing this. So, you know, is it even fair to expect of students that you're going to be all into one another's success and interdependent and everybody's working toward the same goal in the same way as if you were trying to, I don't know, protect a watershed in your neighborhood with a bunch of other people or something like that? So I don't know what to make of that, but I'm just wondering if our expectations for what group work should be calibrated against the idea that this is a class assignment and you're together for 50 or 75 minutes a day, not really waking up in the morning thinking about this group work stuff.
I actually have an anecdote that might help sort of help us think this through. I have a student who's going to be pre-med track, or hopes to be, and she's spoken to me a lot about how competitive and how unhealthy the dynamic is between students in that program. They all see each other as competitors and are trying to establish, you know, their intelligence over their other peers. And that's sort of the ethos of that. And I think that we have a real opportunity in 105. And I think the student indicated that she likes 105 because that spirit isn't there. These are students from all different backgrounds. They're pursuing all kinds of different academic paths. And I wonder if we could kind of conceive of the sort of social and intellectual training that Anna was emphasizing as kind of an antidote to that kind of spirit. And not that competition has to be unhealthy or toxic, but that that collaboration has a place in their work, They are not an individual agent without support, without the capacity to learn from others. And I think that we really have an opportunity in this class to kind of cultivate that sense.
Yeah, Spencer, I feel like what I'm hearing you point out, which is really helpful for me to think about, is like maybe there is a perk in the fact that they only see these other students for an hour and 15 minutes twice a week, or, you know, 50 minutes three times a week, that like maybe it's great that they get the chance to socialize with people who they aren't going to be competing with. And it is a bit more of a casual, or if not casual, but, you know, light colloquial relationship with these other people. And I don't think I have a suggestion for how to really work with that. But I think really seeing that as something that can be beneficial to them is an interesting thought.
I wonder if disciplines come into play a little bit. So Spencer, you're mentioning, I don't want to stereotype things, but a field that we might label as a little bit more competitive than, you know, learning to write. I hope learning to write doesn't come across as like super competitive as like some of these other fields. So it's interesting to me because I think people take an idea like group work and think that it has a universal applicability, or, you know, it's just group work. You could do it over here, you could do it over here, something like that. But that's probably a little bit naive. I would imagine the context is going to shape how well groups work together and all of that. So that makes me think about the context of a writing class. And I think what this article is pointing out in some ways is you can create situations that are more conducive or less conducive to this. So, you know, what are some of the things that we're actually doing to make this environment work in that way? And then related to that, I know we talked about individual versus collaborative grading, but grades and the idea of competition might be part of that conversation as well. If students feel like they only do well because someone else doesn't do as well, that could be a huge challenge. So let's talk about this environment in which this all plays out.
Yeah, so this begins to touch upon grading. I do a form of contract grading in my classroom and frequently incorporate reflection, both on the daily level and on the level of assignments. And having read this article fairly recently today, I kind of took the intentional step to try to shift authority in my classroom. So I had my students for a few moments take some time to free write and reflect on their progress on their current assignment, which is a literature review, and any kind of struggles or successes that they were having. And after this reflection, I had them pair up with each other and kind of discuss where they were at with the project, and also have the opportunity to ask each other questions if they were struggling with anything. And I found that my students were very eager to kind of check in and move through that process, and then eager to move on to asking me questions. So that kind of touches upon this like feedback or direct feedback example that is being talked about in the article that we're discussing today. And I took the moment to intentionally kind of like push this back onto them by saying, like, I hear your question and here is one suggestion, but how are other people fixing this problem in the classroom? And I found that my students really took that opportunity to speak with each other on a more broad level and offered very good suggestions to each other. So I think it's kind of about like very intentionally making these moves, which is a little bit unfamiliar to me, but I think valuable based on what I've done so far.
Yeah, I like that. And I think it brings us back to the authority and the trust issue that we started with a little bit, is decentering authority. And there has to be trust in order to do that. But that is going to go a long way toward making things work. And what it's making me think about is how interconnected all of these teaching activities and strategies actually are. Because, you know, the same... What you're describing, Devin, I think is group work kind of, but it's also just in the whole class. So like if you were having a whole class discussion about a work of literature and the person at the front of the room is just pushing knowledge out at other people, that's not going to translate into a decentered classroom where students are generating their own knowledge. and you did kind of the same thing of, I think of the playground taunt where you say, I am rubber, you are glue. What you say bounces off of me and sticks to you. I think that's a really helpful strategy for teaching in some ways. You're asking me something, you know, I don't want to avoid accountability here, but I'm just going to bounce it back to you or bounce it back to the group. And then that's going to create that trust, push the authority out, and it's all connected in some ways.
And I liked your approach to that, Devin, because I feel like some of the interactions from the article with the teacher did seem to be, he or she almost seemed like annoyed with the student, like they didn't want to answer the question. So I liked that you gave your own answer and then also turned it back to the classroom. So the students knew that you were there for them, but also that they had the knowledge to answer this question.
And I think that's one of the things that's so like great about the writing classroom is there's not really just one answer to a problem. So I was able to offer one suggestion to my student, but I think four students had various suggestions that would be helpful in fixing their specific problem. So I think that's something that's very specific to our classroom environment and something that we can continue to cultivate.
Yeah. Great insights that, you know, it's also a group of 19 or 20 people in the room, in addition to these small groups that we bring together in some ways. And then one of those five kind of criteria or, I guess, collaboration points that they were talking about, the last one doesn't come through clearly. They called it group processing, but I think what they meant was a kind of meta awareness, like, how's our group doing? And that ability to sort of step back. I don't know that that happens as often as it might in some of these courses. I think you do the job, you do the work, you get your thing submitted, and then you move on rather than stopping to reflect, how did our group do or what was valuable about this? Does anyone have strategies that they would employ, or maybe we can brainstorm a few that would build out more of this kind of meta awareness of group dynamics?
One thing I've done before is when I have, say, my class of 19 split into groups of four, and I have them do some kind of activity where they're gaining expertise or gaining knowledge on something. And then I split them into kind of what I've called mega groups, where each group of four or five will pair with another group of four or five. So now there are two larger groups, and they'll share out just to that group. So it's a more focused way of both giving and receiving information. It's not the same stakes as, all right, share out in front of the whole class and your instructor. It's here's a set of other people that you can both, facilitate knowledge acquisition and also receive knowledge from them. And I think that can be a great way to maybe in a more manageable way think about what another group is doing. Because we all have limited attention spans, and I think that giving a slightly more sort of focused context can sometimes help with that.
One sort of step that gets us to this group processing that I've had trouble with is allowing them to feel comfortable giving each other constructive criticism, because I really think that that is a step on the way to taking stock of where they are as a group. You know, they need to feel comfortable talking to each other. And you know, I was really happy with how some peer reviews have gone, because I think that is such a healthy setting to give each other constructive feedback. You know, everybody in the class is talking with each other. You have these set questions to go by. And I think everyone felt comfortable in that setting, giving each other feedback, giving some constructive feedback. But I've noticed that they're less comfortable with that in their groups when they're not exactly prompted to do it. So, maybe I should try to build some more of that into the actual group work and have like mini, mini peer review feelings going through this group work, so that, you know, they might not have as long of a time to do it in such depth, but they're kind of breaking down that barrier of feeling like they shouldn't say something to another student that they think would, you know, be helpful for all of them, be helpful for their group project. But it's hard to build in that time, even though it feels so necessary.
Do you find that students are, this may come off sounding kind of strange, but too supportive when they work together in groups? Are there points at which they could be more challenging, more critical, and it's kind of like we all are just trying to be nice in these group situations?
definitely noticed that, which, you know, I understand the instinct. I think that I have very similar instincts, and it's hard to work past those. And I think, you know, one of the big things that's been sticking with me with this group work is that it's going to take practice. It's going to take practice for them to get comfortable in these groups. It's going to take practice for me to, like, employ some of these strategies we're reading in this article. You know, it's great to think about them, but then I walk out of class and I'm like, oh, I did one of the four things that I read in this article. And, you know, I think it's going to take them time. I think it's going to take us time just to make those things habitual.
No, yeah. The way I approach this sort of situation with group work is I come from a more creative writing background. So I think of it through the model of, like, a poetry writing workshop in which students would come with, like, concerns that they have for their group. And I also tend to emphasize that if you do have any sort of praise for the work that is shown in a group, then please feel free to, like, say that. But also, you are free to speak your mind in this class setting. Don't be shy about bringing forth that criticism at all. But again, like, that is also facilitated through a lot of trust. And that's also dependent on, like, where they come from with their own, like, backgrounds. Like, I don't want to necessarily assume that they are the most educated on a very, like, specific issue or a topic, or they are writing experts. So I have to sort of, like, facilitate that in a way. But it's very challenging, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Meeting them where they're at. And I think that there's ways, too, that, you know, as you were pointing out, X, they might not always be familiar with these different kinds of sort of practices of, like, what giving constructive criticism looks like just on a very kind of practical level. I think there's ways that as instructors we can model that. Like, when I have groups share out, like, if I have them do a rhetorical chart kind of thing, and we're looking at it together and they're sharing their results, I might say, well, this is great. Here's something else you might, you know, consider, or another angle. And I always try to do it in a very gentle way that both affirms the good work that they've done, but also, you know, pushes them to think about things in other ways. And I suppose it can be difficult to tell how much they internalize of that, but I always do that, hoping that once it gets time for peer review, they'll have some of that kind of language to express that.
So one of the things I liked about the article was it was talking about participation, and it made me think of all of the syllabi that we encounter, and we start with a grading scheme or putting together a class, and we say, you know, participation is 15% of your grade or 10% of your grade. But it's kind of amorphous, I think, a little bit. And then some people will unpack it a little bit more, and they'll say, by participation, I mean speaking up in class, doing the readings on time, and we'll have a list of, you know, check off things. This will get you some participation. And I think that's pointing us toward a lack where we don't actually spell out what do we mean by participation, even if we quantify it by you raise your hand four times a semester or something like that. That's not getting at what we want. So I'm wondering if this conversation and this article might be a little bit more like what I mean by participation. Could I spell that out with this idea of individual accountability, and maybe even get students in the class to let's talk about what that means? Is that just you, or does that mean when a group mate says something that doesn't feel fully fleshed out, you say, I don't think that feels fully fleshed out? You know, so what do these different pieces mean? And could we, you know, just come up with measures of what participation is that are not quantifying them, but actually spelling out this kind of intellectual activity and this dynamic in group participation in more clear ways, if that makes sense?
I like that idea, because even if you can't necessarily watch all the groups all the time, which certainly wouldn't be the most productive use of time, just laying out those expectations would give them a better idea of how to act as a group. Maybe if they haven't had that experience with writing before, like, even if you're not able to make sure that they're always staying on task. And maybe that goes back to, like, delegating some trust to the groups instead of always checking up on them.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And another thing that the article was saying is that these groups work better when there's, you know, clear demarcation of what's trying to be done and organization. You can't just say get in groups and do some work. You got to have some specificity. And I could see how that could translate into the trust equation as well. When we say trust, when I say participation, we can do it together. Let's figure out what we mean by that. And then when I walk out of the room, you all know how these operations should proceed. That seems to be a good way of making sense of this. And then tell me if you think this is worth pursuing as well. We typically say participation in this class, but I'm wondering if we need two separate rubrics for, you know, participation in groups, and let's spell out what that would look like in a healthy way. And then, you know, broader participation in this class, what does that look like?
Yeah, one thing I had them do before my students got in groups for this project that they're working on was I sort of had them make like a contract with each other. And, you know, I think I'm going to think it through a lot more in the future because I kind of, I only spent a very short time with it. And, you know, we really focused on things like how do you expect to communicate with each other? How often do you expect to communicate with each other? And I think that, you know, if I had given that some more structure and some more thought and fleshed that out, hopefully it could have put them on a route to success for these participation and inclusion in their groups. You know, I think I covered the basics, but maybe if I'd fleshed that out more, it would have helped.
Well, I like this conversation because it's rich. I think I'm walking away from it with ideas about ways to implement new strategies and different ways to configure a class or a syllabus and put it all together. So I think that's really powerful. I'm not walking away with a sense of closure, but with a sense of openings that I could go down and, you know, we can work through as we continue teaching. So I'm super, super pleased with that. And I think we've covered a lot. We're going to try to concretize some of this at some point so that we can pass it along to others. But I think the conversation has gotten us in a great space to get ready to do that work. So thank you all very much. I did look up promotion because it seemed like I should know what that means, but it makes sense to look it up. And it traced the etymology a little bit and talked about, you know, movement, the motion that makes sense, and pro as looking forward. So the idea of moving forward, I like that because you think of a promotion as some kind of hierarchy. I'm moving up, but I like the idea of moving forward. And then when we add the group or collaboration dimension, it's this moving forward together. It sounds like a political slogan, which I don't know, which is great. We want to move forward together, but I also like that as kind of just a keynote for teaching a writing class. And if you could set that tone overall, I think it probably is going to go a long way toward making all these other pieces fall into place. Well, any final comments from the group?
I feel energized to go teach my class in a few minutes, which will be a peer review session. So thank you all for your exhortations to think about group work in a different way.
Excellent. Well, thanks, everybody. Listeners, tune in for another episode, and we'll be back at you with more Teach Writing.